and wherever you are listening in the Delaware Valley. Hello and welcome. This is Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. And if you're watching on YouTube, you probably notice we have some greenery around us today.
Gorgeous.
And that may have been
all
a clue.
100% real, too.
Yes, absolutely.
Authentic.
And it's because spring has officially sprung, and that means it is time to get your hands dirty.
I do love this, by the way.
And so we brought some greenery in because today we're going to talk about gardening.
Woo.
Whether you've got a backyard, whether you've got a balcony, a rooftop, or just a few containers by a window, gardening is more accessible than you think. And today we're going to have a couple of experts. They're going to talk to us with some how-to tips for beginners. We're going to talk about how to save some money if you're already in the game and you want to level up. We're going to talk about seeds, soil, critters, all those things.
Critters?
Yes, critters.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Critters get on your nerves. I had some critters. We're going to talk about fungus. Anyway, so many things. And we're going to talk about...
Are you anti-fungus?
I don't really like them on my vegetables. No.
Yeah.
No, it's a problem.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about all these things today with our experts. We have Sally McCabe in from the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society and Jenny Rose Carey. She is an author and all around garden whisperer. Okay.
Ooh.
Jenny knows her flowers. And so this is your chance. Our question of the day is for you to get your questions in for our experts. Anything you want to know about spring gardening, you get to ask our experts today. You can call 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, leave your question or comment in the chat. And we also want to see your photos of your garden setup. So this is your chance to show off,
nice.
Okay?
Nice.
If you have a great garden setup, send
Don't
those
be
pictures
humble.
In Studio2@whyy.org. Go ahead. Tell them. Don't be humble.
Yeah, don't be humble. And honestly, as I was thinking about today's show, because I'm not a big gardener, I was really thinking about the season finale of the White Lotus.
Yet again.
It came to mind because a lotus is a flower.
It is.
Isn't it?
It absolutely is. I got to watch this.
So I was actually, what I was really thinking about was that there is, so like we've been in this groove now where like during every week, we do three shows, and two of them are a little more serious, and usually one's a little bit lighter.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a song that is about committing yourself to a garden in order to block out the noise of the
Ooh.
World. And I'm curious, I am so curious, if anyone will submit this song for DJ of the Day today, which
yes.
is, it's a Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
We always close the week
DJ
with a song.
DJ of the Day!
With a song nominated by you. Our humble listener. And so if you have a song about gardening, seasons, flowers, vegetables growing, or if you can guess the very specific song that I'm thinking of, send your submissions to producer Paige at studio2@whyy.org before 12:30, and we will pick one Studio 2 DJ of the Day at the end of the hour.
Yeah, I love DJ of the Day because people pick all kinds of songs, and I just love it. And some of them I've never heard of, and some of them I'm like, yeah, they nailed it. They got it. This is what I was thinking, too.
Someone wants to know what the best fertilizer is for a white lotus.
You know what, Gasper?
Gasper on YouTube. Thank you for indulging me, by the way. So trio of local news stories.
And you got it.
Let's start with a very serious one. SEPTA released a budget proposal today. It is not a pretty proposal. Here's a clip from interim CEO Scott Sauer.
So last year we budgeted on hope. Governor Shapiro put us in his budget last year, and we hoped that the legislature would pass that budget. It didn't happen. Our board charged us this time to budget with the funding that you know you will get, not based on what the legislature may or may not do.
So what does a non-hope SEPTA budget look like? Well, the agency says that by next January, with no additional funds, it would have to cut service by 45%, including eliminating 50 bus routes, 5 regional rail routes, and 66 stations. At the same time, it would hike fares. The base fare would go from $2.50 to $2.90. This is all if they don't get any extra money from the state.
Yeah, now there's big pressure on the governor to get his budget passed.
Yes.
And I mean, I want to also mention that if they don't get any funding, they would have layoffs as well.
Yep.
And that would start in early 2026. And, you know, into my mind, Avi, I keep thinking we keep getting to this place every single year.
Groundhog Day.
And this needs to stop. I mean, SEPTA is chronically underfunded. And if they get funds this time, will we be back here again next year trying to fill the gap? There needs to be some kind of solution for permanent funding of SEPTA. And
could it
and
be sales tax? Could it be gaming related? There's been so many things that have been floated. But the bottom line is SEPTA has a $213 million deficit in the upcoming fiscal year. Mm-hmm. I will just say as a disclosure, I am wearing my SEPTA sweatshirt today. I'm not thinking when I get dressed in the morning. So I'm not making a statement with that.
They had a flash sale, y'all. They had a flash sale.
And I will also say that this sometimes budgets are statements of priority. Sometimes they're also political documents and they're warnings. This one is a warning. So now you can kind of put numbers to what's coming. You can put an idea. You can SEPTA, I think, wants you to think about what's coming here, including, by the way, for sports fans, no special service for Phillies, Eagles, games and concerts. So that's something that could get people's attention.
Yeah. And so, you know, we'll see what happens with this budget season. And we're moving on and we're going to stay in the transportation mode.
Yes.
The last
crumbling transportation mode, unfortunately. Yeah.
The last remaining taxi service on the main line is done.
Wow.
Maxwell Taxi Cab Co. recently gave its last ride. The company had been family owned and operated and around for over 50 years. And in many ways, it's a sign of the times, you know, as Uber and Lyft grew and became the preferred choice for those needing car service. It significantly reduced demand for traditional taxi services. And so increased expenses. They have had big hikes in insurance premiums, and it made their business just basically unsustainable.
I was surprised there still was a taxi service on the main line. I mean, like, kudos to them for making it this far.
Yeah, and a pretty cool story in the Enquirer, though. They talked about how in the early 2000s that this taxi cab company would get 700 calls in one night.
Yeah.
And there are 19 cabs would be busy all night. It would be nonstop.
A lot of college students who had
enjoyed themselves. And you think about it. How do college students get around now?
Boop, 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 boop.
Phone. Uber and Lyft, right? And I asked myself, I said, when was the last time I caught a cab? I only typically catch a cab from the airport.
Yeah.
You think about how it was 15 years ago. Totally different.
Totally different. One interesting thing in this Enquirer story that just made me go, huh. They said one of their last big clients was a group of nuns.
Which made
sense to me. Like, who would, you know, because a lot of nuns take a vow of poverty, don't have a car, like, need to get around. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about that. Like, who's still using taxis? In this case, it was they had a contract with, I guess, a cloister of nuns.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Story number three.
Yeah.
Let's lighten it up just a bit.
Okay.
Only just a bit, by the way. It's not super light. So yesterday on Jeopardy, there was a question that is deeply tied to Philly, even though you might not know that it's deeply tied to Philly. And there's a really interesting backstory behind this Jeopardy question. So here was the question, okay? A term for Nicaraguan rebels led Stephen Freed to coin this word for couture designer or a supermodel super fan. So what's the word? What's the word that Stephen Freed coined that is based on a term for a Nicaraguan rebel?
Well, I know that answer.
Yeah, well, I already told you. I should have not told you. That would have been a lot more fun. The answer is fashionista.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that that word is a reference to the Sandinistas from Nicaragua? I had no idea. So it's kind of crazy that's where the word fashionista comes from. But the guy who coined it, Stephen Freed, is from Philadelphia. He's a Philly-based writer. And he coined this term fashionista, and it's interesting because it's a word with a single etymology. It's one guy who invented the word fashionista. He coined it in a biography of a Philadelphian, a woman named Gia Carangi, who is sometimes described as the first real supermodel, and she tragically died very young of AIDS. And Stephen Freed wrote this biography of her that really helped elevate her status as a cult hero in the fashion world. It also led to a movie starring Angelina Jolie.
Yep.
But just randomly in the book, he happened to coin this neologism, fashionista. And in the beginning, it didn't really catch on. And then it really caught on and it led to we still use the word today, fashionista. Yeah. So fashionista, a Philly word.
Yeah, Donatella Versace referred to herself as a fashionista.
Are and you this, a fashionista?
I try to be some days.
You try to be some days.
But, you know, it's so interesting.
I got 0 days.
It's so interesting. He only mentioned the word 4 times in his book. And then the number of times it got mentioned year after year grew. And
grew,
now
grew,
it's
grew.
It's a word we all know the meaning of.
And then eventually, I think he apologized in a piece in The Atlantic for introducing
for creating the word.
We don't apologize for having a whole show about gardening.
No.
Because folks love gardening. And that is our topic today on Studio 2. If you have gardening questions for our experts, send them in via email to studio2@whyy.org or call 888-477-9499. And welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. And it's a little chilly this afternoon, but it is officially springtime.
Official.
It's time to use all that pent-up winter energy and get outside to prepare garden beds of all shapes and sizes and start the growing season off right. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Maybe you're a longtime gardener planning to clean up your flower beds and prune existing shrubs, or maybe you are brand new to gardening and not sure where to begin. No worries. No judgment. We have two enthusiastic experts in our Philadelphia studio to answer all of your questions about rooftops, containers, community gardens, backyard plots, big and small.
Sally McCabe is the Associate Director of Community Education at Pennsylvania Horticultural Society. Sally, so great to have you back on Studio 2.
So good to be here.
And we have Jenny Rose Carey, a horticulturist, educator, and author of several books, including Glorious Shade. Her forthcoming book is called The Essential Guide to Bulbs. And Jenny Rose Carey, welcome back to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
And our question for you, our listeners at home, is for you to send in your questions for our experts.
So
anything you want to ask about spring gardening, you can send those questions in right now at studio2@whyy.org. You can also call us because we'd love to hear your voice as well, 888-477-9499. And if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to leave your question or comment in the chat.
Oh, and by the way, if you have a favorite picture of your garden setup, send it in because we can put it out there on YouTube for all the YouTube folks to view and gawk at and be envious of, okay?
Yes. And so we wanted to start, like, I have a rooftop garden that I started last year, thanks to your help, by the way.
Yeah.
And I went up there and it looks a hot mess. So for people, it's just, you know, there's nothing. I need to clean it up. So I want both of you to sort of start from where should people be starting? They go outside, they look in their yard, there's weeds, there's stuff in there, like dried up, you know, whatever. They looking at their containers. They look crazy. Like, where do you start to sort of set yourself up to win this gardening season? And Sally, we'll start with you, then Jenny Rose.
I would say give yourself some immediate visible impact. Mm. Go buy some hyacinths and some tulips in a pot and put it out there.
Mm.
So you've
it's
at
like
least
motivation,
got
you know?
Yeah, it's some motivation, yeah. And to shame everything else, or worse, it makes you realize how awful the rest of it looks like. We're kind of on the edge of frost, no frost. So it's way too soon to put out. Everybody's just itching to get their tomatoes out there,
and get those
annuals out there. And it's too soon. But there is a lot that you can be putting out, and infrastructure is everything. Clean up.
Okay, so now it's cleanup time.
Well, it's cleanup time. It's okay. Again, we're walking the edge of frost, no frost. So we're waiting for. There's a lot of butterflies and critters still in that garden. I guess you could call it the detritus. We call it mulch. So as far as that hard raking goes, don't do the hard raking yet. Wait another week or two on that. But clean up the trash and clean up and assess your situation.
Yeah.
You know, you said it's a hot mess. What's a hot mess? Do the containers look bad? They're dirty. They need to get cleaned. Or the plants just don't look
you know, it's
happy
just
yet.
Like they're dried up twigs in there, you know, because I had tomatoes and stuff. So they've kind of They just look like they need to be pruned.
Shame on you. You should have cleaned that up in the
fall. No. The tomatoes are gone.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
But the, you know, the twigs, I guess the branches are still there, and they just look like they shriveled up, and it just looks like it's been through the winter.
I'm calling this is like the Barney week. Clean up, everybody, everywhere, right?
Oh, yeah. That day you do your share.
I just coined something there. So anything to add, Jenny Rose?
We have to remember all the insects that have overwintered in that hot mess. And even if you have a small garden, see if you can put some of them into something that looks intentional, like a nice container. You can put all those twigs in there and make sort of a little sculptury thing.
Ooh.
So you don't want to get rid of those. You want to keep them there because insects might be hibernating in those twigs. Oh. And also seeds might be in there for the birds and things like that. So, you know, we're trying to let people be a little less judgmental about their own garden or their neighbor's garden and say, you know, what we call a hot mess might be the insect's best place.
Mm.
But I agree with Sally because, like some pansies, just go and get and do something that's right outside the door. Make a nice pot with pansies in or something that can take that frost that Sally was talking about. But, you know, just give yourself a little splash of color to cheer you up. And
so
don't
when I'm
worry
out there,
too much.
I won't feel like
frost.
Yes,
yeah,
so
like, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. It's like
yeah,
a balance.
You get something good to look at.
Yeah.
Well, you got to balance, you know, between your prep work for the season and a little instant gratification,
yes,
right? Okay. So before we get to all these very specific questions from our listeners, I do want to ask one more general question, which is climate-wise, what have the last few months, because I don't really pay attention to whether we're in drought or it's been raining a lot. Like, what's the sort of the climate baseline this spring right now? Is it feeling good? Is it feeling bad? Do I have to adjust for that? I'll start with you, Jenny Rose.
I think some bits of the region are in drought. Like, I think downtown Philadelphia is suffering, but other bits have had plenty of rain. And this is what we see year after year, that different bits get, you know, like, think of last summer. Much of it was in drought, but certain pockets had, you know, more water than others. But I think the craziest thing this year has been that we've had these 80 degree days and then down below freezing again.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have had...
We've been whipsawed a little
bit.
Yes,
yeah. So I think we're doing probably a bit early, would you say, on things? The cherry trees have been looking nice. The daffodils are out.
Actually, I think they've been right on schedule.
You think they're all right? Yeah.
I mean, but what's the new schedule?
Yeah.
I mean, if you were looking at...
It's a climate change
10
schedule.
Years ago, it's definitely visibly moved up. But as far as, like, the last four years, we're right. We seem to be on...
And drought-wise?
Drought-wise, we're still low.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had so much rain, but the rain comes all at once.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been really replenishing. It's washed off. It hasn't been replenishing the aquifers and quite enough. And we usually count on that winter snow to slowly seep into the ground, and we didn't get that.
Yeah.
But you know what? You've got rain coming the next few days, so you're in luck.
Well, there you go.
That's
and
right.
April showers bring May flowers.
Oh, right.
Yes, I love that. And what zone are we in? Because people, I didn't know that there were zones until... I realized this in the middle of the gardening season that, you
it's
know.
It's good to know.
And so what zone are we in? What things typically grow well here as we sort of like, we do the cleanup and we're trying to plan and think?
So if it's an annual, you know, like zinnias and tomatoes and things, it doesn't matter what zone.
Yeah.
So you're in luck with that. But if you're growing perennials or perennial vegetables or things like that, then you look on the USDA website. And you type in your zip code and it will tell you your zone. But generally, if you're up in the Poconos, it might be a 5, maybe 4. If you're up in the mountains down the shore, it's probably 7 A or B. You know, Cape May will be warmer still.
We're mainly zone 7.
With 6. Yeah. There's a big chunk of 6 in the north of. Mm-hmm. You know, like the northern suburbs,
away from the buildings.
Yeah,
I mean it
because that
it
heats things up.
That's definitely. Okay. I mean, we've gone in our lifetimes. Yep. We were zone 6, solid zone 6, and now we're solid zone 7.
Wow. Yeah, mm-hmm.
So we're now North Carolina and Georgia.
Yeah,
and
but you can grow a lot of things. I mean, I'm always, as you can tell from the accent, I'm not from here, but I married a Philadelphian. So, you know, when you look at the things we can grow an incredible range of things.
Yeah.
We can grow things from the north, from the south. I mean, and then you play with microclimate and you put it on the south side of your house and you get even a little bit warmer.
Yes.
You know, but your windy rooftop is going to be slightly colder because of the, you know, the wind.
Mm-hmm. So, and then slightly warmer July.
In the summer.
In July, yeah. what we've noticed, we have been gardening for a while, is food gardening. We're the vegetable gardeners. We can now, because we've moved zone, into zone, since we've zoned into seven, we can be growing stuff almost 12 months of the year.
That's amazing. Wow. That's remarkable.
I mean, you'd need to give it a little help and play with Mother Nature and do some season extending, but I'm picking broccoli still from last fall.
Mm. Wow.
So we have a lot of very specific questions, as we often get for this type of show, and I want to get through some of them, you know, pretty quickly so we get a lot of them in here. Let me start, because someone mentioned microclimates and, you know, your specific setup. Anno on YouTube says, are there any herbs I can grow in my super shady row home backyard? I have one of these, and I have no idea what works back there. Herbs? Can I do herbs in a super shady row home backyard?
Absolutely. The more sun that you get, the more flowers that you're going to get on your herbs. But since herbs, we're eating the leaves, it doesn't really matter. Mm. You can get away with...
basil?
I mean, what can you not get away with?
Well, not lavender, not any of those silver Mediterranean herbs. Yeah. That
they need that sun.
But if you go for the leafy herbs like basil, actually need some shade. Parsley.
Mm. I love those herbs.
Yeah, those are two good.
Oregano.
Mint.
Yeah.
Oh, especially the mint. Any
the mint
of the
will
mints.
Grow anywhere.
Oh, so mint's super durable. Yes. Good to know. Okay. Should we get another one in here now, Jerry?
Yeah, let's get another one in here. Let's see. Email from Laura, who says, what do we do with onion grass? It's everywhere in a big way. How do I get rid of it without digging up the plants around?
Make a lot of spaghetti. No, seriously, you cut that off. It is wonderful diced.
Onion grass?
Onion grass. It's onion grass, garlic grass.
Yeah.
It's coming up and it's through the standing, lawn. It's coming up through the lawn, and it has little bulbs underneath. And if you really want to get rid of it, you have to dig up the bulbs.
Yeah.
But mostly you mow it with the grass
and then live with it.
Yeah. But if you're going to be eating it, you have to be really careful. There's another thing that grows up out of our lawns, and that's Star of Bethlehem.
Yes.
You don't want to eat that. It's also a bowl. But the way to tell the difference is one smells like garlic and the other one doesn't.
Ah, use your nose. Speaking of grass, Mora on YouTube says, I'm not a fan of grass. I'm redoing my small quilt patch of a backyard. What can I use in lieu of grass? So Jenny Rose Carey, give us some ideas for good grass replacements.
Well, first of all, you'd have to decide whether you want it for sitting on or playing games on.
Yes.
I use a lot of gravel. I mean, it's not so good for ball games because it does get scuffed up.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're using it as a patio area, like a permeable gravel would be great, because then the water flows right into it to whatever you've got around it. You can do ground covers, but then you can't walk on them so much. If you have sun, creeping thyme is good, but again, put it on gravel, not on soil.
Creeping thyme.
Yeah. So you can eat it, but it's not that tasty.
Okay.
But it smells good when
you walk
on it.
It smells lovely.
Ooh, so, wow. I like that. I like the sound of that.
So if you look for low-growing ground covers of any sort, and depending on whether you have shade or sun, but you can do some flagstones for putting your chairs on, and then gravel in between, and then sow seeds in between in the gravel. It's really fun. It's fun.
Wow.
But you're also setting yourself up for microclimate there, because the stone will hold the heat, so you're going to have more heat in the summer.
So but you'll have longer.
So I say clover. Clover.
Yeah.
Clover.
Oh, you're a clover fan.
I'm a clover fan.
Oh, interesting.
Wow. Yeah. It's so interesting. By the way, you can get your questions in to our experts by calling 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, keep those comments and questions coming. And also send in your photos of your garden setup. We'd love to see it. I want to bring in a caller. We have Gretchen from Chalfont, Pennsylvania, who has a question. Gretchen, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I have Canadian thistle. I started digging it out, and all it did was make it stronger, and now it's gone from being in the garden into the grass. And somebody told me to use an herbicide, but I just want to make sure that that's safe. And if they can recommend something, I would love to know.
Mm. Okay, Canadian thistle. Let's get a little bit of a baseline here. You guys both, first of all, I'll just say this for the folks just listening. When your faces told the story on Canadian thistle.
Not
you
good.
Guys were like,
it's not good.
No, no, no. So what is it? And how do we get rid of it? Sally, do you want to start with that one?
My daughter has a garden of raised beds. The beds are probably 3 feet tall, and the Canadian thistle comes all the way up through the 3 feet.
Oh, my goodness.
Persistence.
It's an invasive?
It is invasive. It drops seeds. It spreads from the roots. Ugh. It will come and get you in your bed at night.
So no,
oh my goodness.
I mean,
no
it's,
shortcuts,
it's nasty.
You're saying. No shortcuts.
There are no shortcuts.
But the goldfinches love the seeds.
Yes, they do.
But they do spread. I mean, really, when we talk about invasive, it has to be not from around here and spreads, you know, so fast that you can't do anything with it. But the key to any of these weeding things is, as Sally said, be persistent, but start at one end of your problem.
Yeah.
And every time you go out of the door, start at that same bit, because then you feel like you're making some progress. Mm. So it has a tap root like a carrot. So you're going to dig that tap root like a dandelion as well. You get as much of that root out as possible. I never, ever recommend herbicides, especially if you're in a residential area, because you don't know whether it's going into the groundwater, whether it's going to harm your pets or your children or grandchildren, whatever. But the don't let it go to seed. Don't let it flower or go to seed. Chop the tops off. Either keep on weed whacking it. You can put cardboard or newspaper down and then mulch on top. And if anything pops through, more on top of it.
Yeah. Just try to kill it.
Yes.
This is just extreme vigilance.
As long as you're
burn it.
As long as you're not near a... yeah, we love burning.
Chop it, cover it, burn it.
Yeah, but
Sally lit up and you said burn it.
Not near a wooden house and wear closed-toe shoes. It gets very hot. But, that's how we got rid of it.
Canadian thistle.
Gee. Yeah, but don't blame the Canadians.
I have a soil question and then I have a follow-up to this, because Sherry asks, what's better for a seed starting, potting soil or seed starter?
Oh,
what do
seed
you think?
Starter always.
Yeah.
Seed starter.
It's finer.
Potting soil is whatever.
Yeah.
It's whatever. It's whatever they put in the bag. Seed mix is a much lighter, fluffier. Mm. It holds the moisture. It doesn't have any fertilizer in it. It's just providing a comfortable place for the seeds to pop up.
Yeah, and is it better? And I have to ask you this question, because I tried to grow from seed last year, and everything where I bought the plants, and I did vegetables and some flowers, the vegetables that I bought kind of growing already, they grew well. But all the stuff that I grew from seed, they were oblong, weird shaped, gnarly. So is there a reason why... did I do something wrong where my little baby seedlings just didn't grow right? And then every, cucumber I got, it was C-shaped or misshapen.
Well, what's wrong? You could eat a C-shaped.
I know, I did eat them. Ultimately, over time, your plants were...
Yeah, did I do something? Something in the seed process or growth process?
The stuff that they're selling you in the market is the started plants. They are varieties that are bred to look gorgeous in those little pots. And to be okay. The stuff that you are starting from seeds, there is lots of room for error there. But the magic of starting your own seeds is there is so much more variety.
That my watermelons only grew to be
a few. Because that is not the fault of you started them from seeds.
Okay.
It's not your fault. No. There's no blame here.
Anyway, don't
like
judge
Gabriel
yourself.
Not your fault.
You are off the hook.
Yeah, don't judge yourself.
Let me bring another caller. This is Tony from Abington on line 3. Tony, you're on Studio 2. What is your gardening question?
Hi. First of all, hi to Jenny. This is Tony, Michael and Tony.
Oh, hello.
My question is based on the earlier comments about the weather changing and stuff. Some of my perennials are already coming up, and I want to split like some of my hostas and lilies. Is that something I really can't do yet until we're sure no more frost?
Talking about splitting here. What do you think, Jenny Rose?
I think it's actually a very good time, because if you leave it very much longer, then they'll be up out of the ground too much, and then it'd be much more of an unwieldy mess to dig out. So I would check around, and as long as the ground isn't frozen, dig the whole clump up. And then the traditional method is two forks back to back, not dessert forks, but gardening forks back to back, and then pull the handles away from each other. So you put them in back to back and then pull the handles away, and that divides the clump. If it's a small clump of hostas, get in there with your hands and just start ripping them apart with your fingers. That's my favorite way.
Knives is not the way to go.
Oh, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt the
well, when you're separating them with the forks or with your hands, you're combing. Yes. You're combing the roots apart. Where if you just get in there with a saw or a knife, which I have done on occasion, with
you cut
woody stuff. Yeah. It tends to cut the roots off. Mm. So you want to pull the roots apart.
Yeah, it's actually a very good time. Just make sure you replant right away in, mend the soil with some leaf mold or something like that, compost, and get them back in the ground, and you'll be good to go.
Can I get another YouTube question in before the break? Breaks at about 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. So Bonnie has a question that actually host of The Pulse, Mike and Scott, asked me before the show. Mm-hmm. Bonnie says, how do I promote native birds in my yard? What type of native species should I plant to support caterpillars that birds feed to their nestlings? And Mike also wanted to know more generally, like, how do I plant to encourage native wildlife to be in that space? Encourage, not discourage. So what do you think, Sally?
Well, if you're trying to get the native species of birds, then you need to plant the native species of plants.
And there are many good plant sales coming up, Bowman's Hill, Mount Cuba Center, many of the other public gardens have plant sales, and they'll have experts there and that you can ask them about those. But in general, if you can plant a tree like an oak tree, if you read any of the work by Doug Tallamy, who's from Delaware, so local author, University of Delaware, he will give you all the information on that. So do a bit of reading. Look up Doug Tallamy.
So it's as simple as native plants equals native
birds.
Yeah. Native birds and species. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
And diversity.
And lots of diversity. Maybe let's try to get one more caller in here. This is Kyle from Pottstown on line 4. Real quick, Kyle, I'm sorry we're squeezing you before a break. You're on Studio 2. What's your question?
Hey, I have some morning glories that are growing on a fence in my driveway, a gravel driveway. And I made the mistake 1 year of letting them grow and flower and seed, and now I have to deal with hundreds of morning glory sprouts every year.
That's
why I have a way to get rid of them at all, just to prevent them from coming back up. Thank you.
Morning glory issues.
And I saw your face again, Sally.
They are so beautiful.
You like morning
glory. Really are beautiful.
So what are they for folks who may not know what they are? And then
it's a trumpet flower, and it comes in such a variety of color: red, white, blue, pink. Yep. Not too many
blue,
yellows.
Most of the blues.
Mostly they're blue. Yeah. And
they cover your fence nicely. So, I mean, it's a fine line with these vines in particular, because when they take hold, they try and take over your whole garden. And but you can weed whack them. You can burn them the same as the...
I have put the ground on fire, so I don't burn anymore. Yeah. I don't do that.
We have had some accidents with the burning, but you do have
to
be
careful. So it's the same principles apply, though.
Yes,
But you've got to keep them from going to seed.
Yeah.
And they go to seed from flower in a matter of a day.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's like, well, maybe two. But, I mean, it's just like that. Boom, boom. You see flowers, and then you see seeds.
And I would think that the winter would take away some of these things, but it seems like it doesn't affect them.
They're annuals, so they'll grow anew next year.
Well, luckily, we will grow another segment anew after a quick break on Studio 2. Not my best work, I'll admit. You're listening to Studio 2 on WHYY. Keep those calls and emails coming, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back, like an annual.
I love it.
Hey, And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We're talking about gardening this hour. We have a ton of questions and comments coming in from our listeners. And we have two guests in our studio. We have Sally McCabe. She's the Associate Director of Community Education at Pennsylvania Horticultural Society. We also have Jenny Rose Carey, a horticulturist, educator, and author of several gardening books.
And we were just saying during the break, we just love your guys' dynamic. There's just something about the two of you together that's magic on the radio. Ask our experts your spring gardening questions. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org or leave a question in the YouTube chat.
Yeah, I want to read this comment from Ryan, who says, I'm located in the Fairmount neighborhood and I do my best to garden with the small outdoor space I have, meaning lots of container gardening. Do you have any recommendations for potted plants, which both climb and flower? And he says, I've been told perennials fitting this bill won't survive the winters, but maybe annuals will. Morning glories, cucumbers.
This guy wants morning glories.
I know. So
I'm sending that to you because I'm...
Well, the nice thing about containers is you can change them out every year. And that's what a lot of people do in our region with containers, just because, you know, many of the things that grow and flower all summer when we're outside on our patios and in our back gardens are, you know, are not going to overwinter. So things like a mandevilla vine is always a lovely thing. Any of the things like the black-eyed Susan vine is another lovely one. If you want vines, but really you can't beat zinnias and marigolds and those easy, you know, quote unquote easy ones that you don't want to exclude from your garden because they're just so much fun. So I would try mandevilla. I would try black-eyed Susan vine, which has these cute. It looks like a little black-eyed Susan, but it grows up a trellis.
I love black-eyed Susans.
I love that. Ryan, I hope that answers your question. Now, I wanted to ask you, Sally, about container growing vegetables.
I would be
in containers as well.
Are we trying to get things that will come back as vines every year?
I think that's what Ryan kind of wanted.
What about clematis?
Yeah. I mean, clematis.
Yeah, because they'll come back. They'll come back. See, I would have a hardy kiwi out there. Yeah. I would have a hardy kiwi.
Like the
fruit? Yeah. K-I-W-I. Kiwi.
They will grow. Kiwi grows. You can grow kiwi?
Yes, but they're not the little furry ones, but they're very tasty.
Wow.
Yeah, they...
There's a different type of kiwi, huh?
Yeah.
And does the container gardens, when you're trying to grow vegetables, do they work the same way? Do you kind of retill that potting soil there? Do you dump the soil?
No. I add compost to the top.
You just add compost to the top. And you typically have to replant, right? All new.
Well,
some of them might grow back.
The perennials. The perennials. Thank you. Words are not working for me today. The things like the clematis, there's no replanting needed. Yeah. That will come back year after year because it's a perennial vine. The hardy kiwi, hardy, so it will come back.
Yeah.
Any other vegetables that come back?
Oh, yes.
Oh, not vines. No. Yeah. Okay. No, but they're so easy to replant. Okay. I mean, you take your little cucumbers that seed on you. Cucumber vines.
Good stuff.
We have a PSA here from Frank who says, Sally, please let Philly homeowners know they can apply for a free tree through PHS. Is that true? It says this weekend is the spring planting. Apply now for the fall planting. Renters can also inform their landlords of this free service.
What you want to do is find the tree tender group in your neighborhood because those are the folks that are trained and those are the folks that are organizing the plantings.
Oh, perfect.
You can also apply to the city.
Good.
To get a street tree.
Nice.
By the way, we got some photos from our listeners. William in Fishtown sent one in. Also, we have a picture. Oh, that's gorgeous. We have a picture of Nina's sunflowers.
Oh, I love sunflowers.
Love sunflowers, too. Those are gorgeous.
And a couple more here.
David.
David has a white lotus bed. Heck yeah, David. Oh, wow. And Charles sent a photo of his containers in Mount Laurel. Absolutely lovely.
Wonderful.
Those are some beautiful setups.
Gardens.
Oh, my goodness. I see why y'all are bragging.
Obviously, I would be bragging.
They're bragging.
This is a big type of question. We have a few different versions of this, but I'll read this one from Heidi. And it's basically about how you know when it's over. I have a Carolina allspice that I bought and planted last September. I think it may be dead, but how can I be sure? The branches are bendy, not brittle, but it's not budding. Okay, Jenny Rose, in general, how do we know when we just got to call it?
If it's outside, it won't have budded out yet. Yeah. I mean, if you look up at the trees, the red maples are starting, a few of the red buds are starting, and then the flowering cherries, as we said earlier. But, you know, your allspice is a native, a Carolina allspice is a lovely native shrub. And if the twigs are still bendy, it's probably still alive.
Nice.
So
bendy is good.
Bendy is good. And if you get your thumbnail and scrape the bark, and if it's just slightly green, that's also a good sign. If you break it, if it cracks, you know, when you break it, that's not so good.
That's a bad sign. Yeah. Sally,
bendy, not brittle, is a good rule of thumb for any shrub. The shrubs are as confused as we are about this weather.
Yeah.
And so if they're holding back because they're just afraid, give them time.
Huh. Yeah.
I mean, if it hasn't budded out by the end of May, you're...
Yeah. But generally, give things longer. You know, we've seen this after droughts and other... extreme weather events, and give them longer, unless you
don't
need that space.
Don't lose the faith.
Yes,
they do come up when you least expect it.
Yeah.
I want to bring in a caller. We have Rich from Orland, Pennsylvania, who has a question. Rich, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment for our experts?
My question, I have a plant called Lesser Celandine that is sort of taking over my growing in my shrub bed and growing in my lawn, and wondering if there's any ways other than Roundup glyphosate to get rid of it.
It's beautiful
right now. Enjoy the heck out of it.
You actually had a positive reaction to this.
It's beautiful, but
if you did want to get rid of it because of it's causing some other issues, this is called celandine.
Yeah.
Did I hear that right?
Its old name was Ranunculus ficaria.
So it's like a buttercuppy.
It's a yellow buttercup-like thing.
Okay.
They've reclassified it as Ficaria verna. Who knows, those taxonomists, what they're doing. But it is a thug, and especially down by the creeks, you'll see it. It loves moisture. So any ways you can get it less moist will help reduce it. But I think it's throughout the whole region. If you have it in your flower bed, do try and pull the whole thing up, but you'll see the little tubers at the base, the little nut-like tuber things. Try and get rid of those. It's going to take, again, it's another weeding persistence thing.
Persistence
you can
pays.
Smother if it's on an area where you are wanting to develop it later. Cardboard, newspaper, the same as before.
Same, yep.
Yep.
You know how to take out a plant.
I
man.
Do.
You
really yeah. do. Don't mess with me.
Oh, my goodness. I want to bring in another caller. We have Hillary from the Philly suburbs. Hillary, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Thanks. People around here have tried growing watermelons for 10 years and not had any results, or had maybe one little tiny. So you're probably a master gardener because you got some kind of watermelons. But what is the secret of growing good watermelons?
Thank you so much, Hillary. And that's a good question, because I tried to grow watermelon on my roof and my watermelon were very small, but I grew quite a few.
You need to grow small watermelons.
Yeah. Oh.
We are not South Carolina. We're not the South.
Yeah.
And that's what it takes to get a really good big watermelon.
Yeah. So we're just, this is the climate.
It's the varieties that we pick. We need to pick the smaller varieties.
Oh, okay.
So you did good.
I did good. And I grew like three. By the way, I'm going to show a picture of my garden, the before and after. This is the little bit that I had. But there was I grew like cantaloupe as well. That's one month it sprouted up. That's just one of the
is that
the
basil cherry?
That is actually a little bit of basil in the front, and then there's a tomato in the back.
Looks
and I also
good.
Wanted
oh,
to talk
great.
About mixing plants, but
yep.
I grew three cantaloupe and a honeydew.
So there's no real reason why they can't grow the watermelon. I mean, get them in the ground as soon as the soil warms up, right?
Yeah.
And you need to wait until it warms. But what other tips would there be?
Well, if you want the soil to warm up early, you can – darker soil will absorb heat.
Yeah.
Lighter soil will reflect heat.
Makes sense.
So you don't want – they want hot roots.
Yeah.
The watermelon, the cantaloupe, the melons, they like hot roots. So if you're growing them in containers, darker containers, and darker mulch.
Get that heat in there.
Yeah, if you're trying to grow things like cabbage and broccoli and things like that, you want the soil to be cooler.
Mm.
So you are manipulating, especially in containers.
Yeah.
You're warming the soil.
And you just have, you can't, you're saying, this, your expectations need to be.
You've got to be in line with reality.
I mean, we are in Pennsylvania. We are not Georgia.
Yeah, it makes sense. Urgent gardening question from Gene.
I love it.
Urgent one.
Spider mites and white flies have invaded and come back each year. Please help. Without toxins.
Oh my goodness.
We haven't really talked about bugs yet, actually. So,
and vermin.
So that was spider mites and white flies.
Okay, on.
Do we know what plant it's
on? Do we know what they're on?
I don't have any more, I'm sorry.
Okay, so spider mites are, they take advantage of the drought.
Yeah.
They are, they get on the underside of a lot of plants, and they particularly love plants that are under stress. So what you need to do is to
enrich the soil.
Unstress your garden. Yeah. So you want to enrich the soil. You want to make sure that the water is even. You want to make sure that you're mulching so that there's not dry and then wet and then dry and then wet. The white flies are, it's interesting, that has come with climate change. They used to just be a greenhouse problem. Yeah. Now they are in our fields. They're in our gardens, and I've got them persistently on my collards and cabbage.
Oh, how do you get rid of them?
The two pesticides that we use as organic gardeners, for insects that chew, it's neem oil. Insects that suck, it's insecticidal soap. Okay. Now, the spider mites suck in so many ways.
But they're not, they're not an insect because they have eight legs.
Oh, they have, right? They're not. Okay, there you go.
Wait.
But anyway, critters, sorry, the little critters that suck juices, we use insecticidal soap on
Well,
them.
I don't use any of those, and my whole thing is tolerance for a start, and then my go-to thing is washing down with a strong hose, and look where they are on the plants and why they're there. And again, a lot of it goes back to having a diverse garden that you hope something else will eat that.
Yeah.
So things in containers are naturally under stress. And as Sally said, uneven watering makes a lot of these problems, you know,
really exacerbates them. Yeah.
So how should you water? What's the best way?
And less often.
Early in the
morning? And also, exactly what Jenny said, that look at where they are on the plants. Mostly you will see them on the underside. So every once in a while, give them a shot of water from below.
Yeah,
so you can just kind of like get them off.
I didn't even think about that. Okay, wow. I think we have time for one more caller.
Yes, let's get it.
So we are near the end of the hour. Dawn from Mount Airy, do you have a quick question for us on Studio 2?
Yes, hi. Thank you for all this information. But is this a good time to prune rose bushes?
Rose bushes. Real quick one, guys. Rose bushes. Dawn from Mount Airy wants to
know.
Good
time to prune?
Yep. Get that dead wood, all the DDD, the dead, diseased, and dying bits out. Try and make the framework look how you want it to do. So like a vase shape, Dawn, so that the buds are all on the outside, and let that air flow through. So get rid of things that are congested in the middle. But do wear your rose pruning gloves, because believe me, those thorns are just brutal. So nice thick gloves.
I knew Jenny Rose would know the answer to that. Yeah.
Climbing roses, don't cut them all the way down. You want to just finesse them.
Okay.
So, you know, ones that ramble up into a bush or onto a fence, just give them a little haircut.
So the DD&D.
Yes.
DD&D. And as we get ready to wrap up, just the timing wise, like when should you really say, you know what, now is the time to plant? Because we are doing that whipsaw weather now.
Okay, cold season annuals. So vegetables that like the cold, good.
All the cabbage family.
Yeah.
So cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, collards.
Yeah.
Mustards.
Anything
and root
that
crops.
Can take the cold.
That's now.
They can all, they don't care.
And then on the plants, the flowers, things like pansies, pot marigold, the calendula, all of those things that don't care whether it's, you know, they don't care about the frost.
They don't care about the frost.
Real... But wait on the zinnias till usually we say Mother's Day.
And the marigolds as well.
Yeah.
Mother's Day.
And the basil.
Yeah.
And the basil. Rule of thumb is the first Saturday of May is Naked Gardening Day worldwide. And it, if the ground is warm enough for your butt, the ground is warm enough to put your tomatoes in.
Yes,
if
we need
it's
to
not,
do a butt test.
It's not. So do the butt
do
test.
Do a butt test.
An all evocative right. example to end the hour on Studio 2. Wow, wow. I love you guys so much.
We love you too.
We're going to do
right in the day, for sure.
Every year at the bare minimum.
The bare minimum. Uh-huh.
That was Sally McCabe, Associate Director of Community Education at Pennsylvania Horticultural Society. Sally, thanks for being here. And
my
Jenny
pleasure.
Rose Carey, horticulturist, author, educator, and avid hands-on gardener. Jenny Rose, thanks for being here.
Bye. Burner.
Yes, I know. I'm going to get a reputation.
And by the way, DJ of the day is Nina.
DJ of the day is Nina. It's an older song called Garden Song. Various artists have covered it. Pete Seeger, John Denver, Peter Paul, Mary, and more. But we picked this performance by John Denver because John Denver has a concert on PBS Passport that producer Paige really enjoyed when
and
she
recommends
watched,
it as watched. Well.
Let's hear a little bit of Garden Song. Our DJ of the day is Nina.
Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
That was not the song I had in mind, by the way.
That is not the song.
Just letting you know.
But thank you, DJ of the Day, Nina. And thank you to everybody for your submissions, the folks who called and emailed in. And thanks to our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, and Al Banks, Tina Calique, who engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Gardener Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Thanks for joining us.